SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. At the races. I don't know what happened. We lost Johnny, but he certainly filled out the hour. And Andy Serling joins us a day early. Andy, also, it's been kind of a funny day that way with everybody having some different obligations. And so a chance to talk to Andy in the wake of the weekend and in anticipation of a very good Saturday that we're looking forward to. The Busher, the Stymie, the Tom Fool, and the Gotham at Aqueduct. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. I want to start with, it's going to be a good week between, I'm headed to Tampa, but between.
Really?
Yeah, they'll be down at Tampa.
You're not afraid of the alligator?
No.
That was pretty funny. I was watching that on the moon. They're walking along the field on the feed while I was in the studio.
It's great. There's a few places, right?
I need to go. I've never been.
It's very pleasant. It's very pleasant.
Everybody loves it. I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Well, there's
should be a good day of racing. We're actually showing a bunch of their races on the Fox Sports Saturday at the races show. I'm not sure because I'm sure we'll show the Tampa Bay Derby. I don't know what else. I think the show is from 5 to 8 because it's obviously going to focus on races. Well, it's going to focus on California, right? You got the San Felipe and the big cap, right?
So yes.
So I mean that's why it's late.
Holy
cow. I'll be
gone
by then.
Well, I did see, because I looked, I sought out the payout on Saturday's Pick 5, and I did see that the Pick 5 on this Saturday, the cross country, will be with Tampa.
And Aqueduct.
Yes. So three
I assume it'll have the Derby and the Gotham. I think we're going to probably run the Gotham as the last race, which will probably be in like the, you know, close to, you know, 5:30 or 6, somewhere in there.
Nice.
We'll see what's coming up. A terrific race, no doubt.
Well, and you've also got the Honeybee at Oaklawn.
Oh, hopefully that'll be part of it, too. So that'll be great.
Yes.
I mean, we can
yes.
pretty much all stakes or mostly stakes. So that'll be great.
And I think Whitmore comes back.
From Tampa's... Oh, is he? Oh, good. Well,
the Hot
they've
Springs.
All got a little company because Mattoli's back.
Yeah. Well, so if they can keep him right, yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a 102 buyer. He's such a terrific horse. I'd love to see him, you know, have a full year. Man, was he good last year. I mean, legitimately could have, you know, there are a lot of horses that could have been champions, but he was running fast races in May as a three-year-old.
Yeah.
He's a good horse.
Well, that division will certainly welcome. I did see that Imperial Hint got back into training the last couple of days, try to write his
debacle.
Ship. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know.
When they get older and they run races like that, you have to be a little worried.
Well, I guess he came out with a hiccup. I mean, he came out with a little...
When they get older and they run races like that, you have to be worried.
No, it's fair.
Hiccups are not. I mean, listen, he doesn't have anything to apologize for. He's had a tremendous career, so he never runs another good race. I don't think people will remember him for running a mediocre third at Tampa, you know.
I hear you. Well, I'm looking forward to Whitmore getting back, too, because...
he's about 40 by now, right?
It feels like it, but... We just had a birthday the other day.
I know. 35.
That was great. It is amazing. I'm glad you mentioned him because there was a wonderful. They had story.
Yeah, the DRF had nice stuff about it. Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Well, he's at Walk Hill, which is a good program, and he's such a wonderful horse. Remember, he beat Groovy.
Is he up for parole at any point at Walk Hill, or is he?
I think he's hoping to stay there for a while longer.
Exactly. Exactly. It feels like it's like Red in Shawshank. Yes.
Right.
Let me get your. I want to get your Fountain of Youth take before we do anything else, because it certainly was an interesting race, and it's brought out all kinds of fascinating responses.
Yeah, meltdowns are always fun races, right? I mean, there's so much to learn from them, and so much to misconstrue, which we love. But, you know, I listen, I was not a Code of Honor fan, so I was impressed that he was able to run as well as he did, and you know, it's a tribute to Shug. And I think, you know, these races, the big race, Triple Crown, there's always a little more interest. I mean, one of the nice things, Triple Crown, is you get some, you know, unknowns. You find out about like Tim Woolley, you know, or different people on it, you know, flying that bird. But guys like Shug McGee, right? I mean, they sort of, you feel like they belong in the big races and in the discussion. And obviously, you know, he's had a success with the Worm and plenty of other horses in the past. But it's nice to see Code of Honor get back for him. On the other hand, realistically, you could not have drawn up a better scenario to draw the rail, to have a fast pace in front of him, to get the perfect ride that he did from Johnny and all those things. It was a perfect storm for him. And the truth is, you know, it was a perfect storm for Orb, right, the Derby. And, you know, we saw what happened in the Derby, right, in that Triple Crown. It was one of the great, it's probably one of the greatest learning experiences for explaining meltdowns in racing history, certainly big racing history, right? Because what happened was the only horse that was near the pace in the Derby, the only horse that came back in the Preakness that was near the pace was Oxbow. So what happens? He comes back to the Preakness and he wins. And then the horse who set the wicked pace in that Derby wins to Belmont, right? So the results have borne out over time that you don't want horses to take advantage of meltdowns, and you want the horses that are run the best in the meltdowns or involved in creating the meltdowns. So Code of Honor's got to show, A, he wants to go farther, and B, he can do it in less ideal circumstances. Having said that, he also has enough speed that he can put himself in a position where he's not necessarily going to be compromised, whereas a horse like Orb, he didn't have any speed, so he was always basically at the mercy of the pace. And I don't think that has to be the case with Code of Honor. So we'll see. I mean, there's no reason not to be optimistic about him. It's a fast enough race, given what the horses in this crop are running at this time, to say it's the best prep we've seen so far in all likelihood, and it's one of the better performances by a number of horses. As far as the second finisher, Bourbon War, he's never the kind of horse that I'm going to bet betting going forward, right? I mean, he also got a sensational trip and ride. I mean, he's got right in the rail behind Code of Honor, supersonic pace, sucking up. I feel as though anybody that talks about the short stretch there is misconstruing the way races are run. It's not as though they all begin moving at the top of the stretch. I mean, different horses have their own particular habits, and some are better at running on turns than others. And maybe that can affect it, but I don't think that Bourbon War was negatively affected by the short stretch, certainly not as much as he was positively affected by his trip. So, listen, he's a good horse. I like Mark and Hennigan. I'm happy to see him doing well, and I'd love to see him do well going forward, but he's another horse that was a very fortunate recipient of circumstance. So he's not a horse that I'm greatly endorsing going forward, but that doesn't mean he's not in the conversation. He's just not the kind of horse I would bet in his next start, but certainly in the top 10 to 15, right, at this point. The third horse, Vekoma, he also ran well in the sense that he was closer to pace than anybody that finished ahead of him. He was outside where Code of Honor was inside in the turn. It was his first start. I think it's reasonable to question how far he really wants to go. I think it's unreasonable to question his talent, because his talent's extreme. You're going to see good things from him down the road. Whether or not they end up being in the Derby, you know, in the Triple Crown race or not, remains to be seen. They're going to go on their next prep, and we'll see how he does. I like him. You know, once again, connections I'm fond of through and through. I've known Randy Hill for a long time, and George Weaver does such a great job. And, you know, I'm one of Manny Franco's biggest fans, so I'd love to see all of them do well. I don't know that. I think they'll do well with this horse. I don't know what races they'll do well with him. But the obvious horse to discuss is Hidden Scroll, right, who was this enormous hype horse off his huge debut. We saw three races earlier. Is that Saturday card over yet, by the way? Are they on, like, the 97th race of that card yet? And we saw, you know, all these horses come out of that race to dramatically improve their buyers. So the Hidden Scroll debut was already confirmed that it was a very fast race, and there isn't a figure maker alive that didn't have it as a very fast race. It was just a question of how fast you wanted to make it. And Hidden Scroll more than backed it up with an absolutely sensational performance for a second-time starter to have gotten into a duel in an extraordinary pace. I mean, Travis Stone said, if you looked at 500 mile and a 16th races at Gulfstream, the pace was a second and a half faster than par. That's nine lengths. They were flying. Horses that are involved in those situations, especially a second-time starter, right, in those circumstances, They might finish ninth and still go on to be grade one winners. And he was there until the 16th ball. It was, to me, a remarkable performance. Does it raise a question of how far we want to go? Of I don't think you need to raise that question. That question always exists. But he has a pedigree to suggest he wants to go longer, and I don't think this race said, oh, this horse is a sprinter. Is it possible he ultimately ends up in the Allen Jerkins? Of course, a lot of things are possible. But I don't think it's reasonable to say, oh, he can't go long because what happened here. He almost survived against a very good field on just a suicidal pace. And he was dueling with a talented turf sprinter. There's really nobody faster than turf sprinters with speed, which is what the speed in that race had. I don't care what price he was. You know, people want to question Joel Rosario's ride. Go ahead, knock Joel Rosario. It's what everybody likes to do. I'm not one of those guys. I don't know the circumstances. Then I see people knocking him for jaywalk because he didn't go to lead. So which is it? Should he be too aggressive or unaggressive? Or is it just what suits people's, you know, criticism at the time? It is what it is. Now, the question with Hidden Scroll is, what does a race like that take out of him in his second start? You know, how quickly does a horse recover? They're all individuals. In the history of racing, you know, I mean, what do? We use the history of racing to try to predict the future. That's what everybody does, right? You look at the past and you see, you know, what you can glean from it to try to predict the future. In the history of racing, forging ahead with horses like Hidden Scroll that have two starts, that kind of race in their second start, it's littered with horses whose careers went by the wayside, right, by being forced ahead. Having said that, Philmont and Judmont are not the kind of connections. I mean, it comes down to whether or not connections are willing to step back with a horse when it's probably the most prudent move for their careers. I think that Philmont and Judmont are exactly the kind of people that are going to make the right decision, whatever the right decision is. So if they decide to go ahead with him, I respect that, but I'm a little dubious whether or not we'll see that happening. I think in all likelihood he's a horse that probably takes a step back and ends up being extremely good in the second half of the season, whether it's races like the Travers or not. He's a very, very good horse, and he is, in my opinion, absolutely the best horse coming out of the Fountain of Youth. Whether or not that means that he's supposed to go ahead towards the Derby is a completely different discussion.
Well, and, you know, the initial, I saw something this morning, in fact, at TDN, Bill Finley, I guess, in his conversation, Bill, in his weekend recap today, he said that he gets the vibe that they are going to go forward. And that surprised me, too.
The TDN reproduced the story without getting quotes left. Whatever. You know, I respect it.
This actually has quotes from Garrett O'Rourke.
Okay. Listen, maybe they will. It's also 2 days after the race.
Exactly. No, I think they'll take, you know, they'll wait and see. I mean, that's exactly, I mean, even should.
I respect what decision they make. They're not fly-by-night guys. You know?
No.
it's a serious conglomeration of very, very smart people in racing with great histories of success. So I imagine whatever decision they make will be the right one, or what they feel is the most right one. I mean, that's the best you can do in racing, is try to make the most right decisions. Good decisions blow up in your face. Bad decisions turned out to be the right decision, right? Usually not. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know. You can say maybe his next prep is a much easier one on him, and it gives a somewhat false impression. I don't know. You know,
yeah.
Holy Bull found a very easy situation in the Bluegrass. It was a debacle in the Derby, but it didn't affect his career going down the road, you know? So, I don't know. We'll see. They're all horse specific, right?
Absolute. And I think the Hofburg, the shadow of
sure.
The Hofburg experience is got to be involved here. But what it was said by Garrett O'Rourke is also germane when he said, you know, Abdullah isn't getting any younger either. I think he made it pretty clear that to take that into consideration too. You know that.
Having said that, I don't think that when he's near the end of his life and he hasn't won a Derby, he's going to live there with great regrets. And I think the great thing will be said for Bill Mott. I think Bill Mott sleeps just fine at night without a Derby win.
His record speaks
for itself. He's never been a Derby obsessed guy. Doesn't mean he wouldn't like to win one. I'm sure he'd love to win one. Who wouldn't? But on the other hand, he is clearly not a guy whose life has revolved around winning the Kentucky Derby. So I don't think he's sitting around thinking, this is my last chance. God, I have to do anything possible to get there. He just doesn't strike me as that kind of trainer or that kind of person. And I don't think Judd Mott is that kind of operation. They're not going to do anything that they feel is not in the best interest of this horse. Their PPs suggest that they're going to do the right thing. I mean, in the Hotberg situation, it's a funny situation, right? Because it was right to take a shot in the Florida Derby, probably. And then they got this sort of, weird confluence of events that led to him maybe running a little better than his talent actually was. So then you're in that situation where you have to go to the Derby. But let's be honest, he actually ran okay in the Derby, right? He also got a quick pace there, but he ran okay in there. The rest of the year, other than his win in the Curlin, turned into a debacle. But also, maybe he got, whatever, he missed the Travers, whether he got sick or whatever, that just completely screwed him up, right? And that led to it. And maybe it had nothing to do with what went on earlier, because he did run very well in the Curlin. So it's not like he didn't come back from his Derby in Belmont and run a good race. So I don't know. It's hard to know. You can always guess. But history, there are a lot of horses that have gone by the wayside because they run in that one race where maybe they would have been better off not running it.
Right.
And you don't want to just sort of, I don't want to list examples because it'll look like I'm pointing fingers, and that's not what I'm trying to do. It's very easy for people like us to sit around and say, this is what the connection should do, this is what they shouldn't do. We don't own them, we don't pay the bills, we're not in the situation. Does it say we have a clearer head? I guess, but it also affords us a kind of an unfair advantage, right? It's not...
Not to say that, no, I agree, and completely. And considering how often, here's what's funny. Considering how often we hear by July, August, September, October, they rushed to get to the Derby. Now they've got no horse. The horse is gone. They ruined this one. It ruined that one. Remember those conversations here in February and March, folks, because the people that are quick to bang on that drum,
it's easy to result. It's easy to say, after the fact what they should have done.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you can talk to successful. And if you said to Bill Mott, so let's talk about some horses you had that you decided to take a step back with instead of forging ahead to that next race, and let's discuss the positive results you got because of that. I'm sure he could give you a very long list. And you're not the kind of trainer that a Bill Mott is or a Shug McGee is that have had great success in their careers with older horses without having made some decisions at the time that were kind of painful, right? You said, I got a horse that's going to be a big favorite in this big race, and I just know running him is the wrong thing. And sometimes, that horse never came back. Or when it did come back, it couldn't run anymore, and you go, I wish I'd run that race at least, right? But they've had a lot of successes with horses that they've benefited from making a prudent decision. And I'm not saying that means they're supposed to stop with Hidden Scroll. I'm just saying that one of the reasons they've had great success with older horses is they haven't made mistakes with them when they were younger.
Right.
And sometimes they're just forced, right?
Right.
Horses just, had issues and they couldn't get in the races. But there are a lot of horses that did okay because they didn't run in that one race they shouldn't have.
Well, and I'm not going to try to equate what happened to materiality with this circumstance, I went back and looked, Andy, and I'll tell you, I know people were tying up, trying to tie in Justify, but the horse that right now, and listen, he got sick over the summer and he died, but that's a different topic. The horse that he reminds me of is Materiality, and he was so talented. And if he had started,
Florida Derby was gigantic,
spectacular. And then people forget, he had that terrible stumble from the three hole in the Derby, and still finished sixth.
He ran reasonably close to a winning race in the Derby.
Yeah,
I totally understand. And then they ran to Belmont, and the wheels came off.
Yeah.
Were they all related? I don't know. Who the hell? Who knows? You can point fingers in racing from where we sit, and you're completely wrong, right? you can think you're right about something, and there's so many things that happen in racing that happen behind the scenes you don't know. But materiality, obviously, is a horse that comes to mind, no question about it. But that doesn't mean that running those races is the reason for his eventual unfortunate fate, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to point fingers. Nobody in those connections was trying to do the wrong thing with a horse. I don't think anybody wants to do the wrong thing with a horse. Sometimes it's hard to make do the right thing. I don't know. Once again, I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. But
well,
I am
not
privy to some of those decisions by people. Sure. So I do know what goes on a little bit. And it's hard. And I'm going to tell you something. If somebody said to me right now, who's the most talented horse you've seen on the Triple Crown Trail? I'm going to tell you it's Hidden Scroll. Doesn't mean he's the most talented in mile and quarter. Doesn't mean he's going to win the Derby. But, that horse is good. I mean, really good. And I think Saturday just confirmed it. And it confirmed it on a fast track. It's his second start around two turns under those circumstances. You don't think that's a good horse. I think you're crazy.
No, I agree.
You learn so much more in defeat than you do in victory, right?
Theoretically, yes. I mean,
there's been no other speed in there, and he had gone 24 and 48, right? He'd won by 3 or 4 or 7, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Potentially, yeah, absolutely. No, you got to learn, though.
All these people that are saying, oh, he can't go far, he's like, they'll be hailing him as the next, monster.
Speaking of some monsters, a couple of notes here and there from Saturday beyond this group. I don't know where we go with the fillies. That was a distressing performance from Jaywalk.
She was terrible.
Yeah, she was terrible.
Either she can't be effective without the lead, which would be a difficult predicament, given that I don't think that. They're going to be looking to rate Tom Amos's horse, Serengeti Empress, going forward. And, we'll see about some of these other horses. Feedback's a horse with speed, too, and she's playing for the Ashland. And Bellamine's not exactly slow, so there's a lot of room up front, right? Or not a lot of room up front.
Yeah.
Was brutal. I mean, she just was brutal. She didn't run a step. And we know how good she's been. We know that she's capable of being a very good horse, but she was horrendous. The winner was okay, though, right? The first two horses.
Yeah, the winner ran.
I think there's not enough credit being given to them. The race got a 91 buyer. It was 4 points lower than the Fountain of Youth, right? So let's not forget that those horses ran okay.
I agree. Cookie Dough ran very credibly, and they were all. I just had the conversation with Johnny, Andy, about what do you take away from this if you're a multi-race player? How did you manage to almost have to hit the all button in this race? Because
almost anybody that hit the big five hit the all button.
Yeah,
I know somebody who did.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I mean, that was a race where I think I'm not an all button guy. But I have, a friend of mine is somebody I've seen in a lot of big fives. He's also lost a lot, but he's also hit a lot of good ones by using all surreptitiously. And that's a race where there are two opinions. Jaywalk is better than these horses. She's going to win. Jaywalk is vulnerable. She's vulnerable. It wasn't really a handicappable race because nobody in there was that good, right? So
yes.
I can understand using an all in there, obviously resulting as well. But I understand that philosophy. It's not a philosophy that I use, but maybe it's something I should consider. I mean, you use them in an ABC method. Steve Crist hit another. I know that there's some people that like to criticize the ABC method out of ignorance. But the reality is that I've seen Steve hit nothing but pick fives as winner using the ABC method. And one of them, when that Robbie Davis horse won, it was impossible. It paid $2,000. All the other four winners were extraordinarily logical. So four A's and a C, bang.
Hmm. Let me slip in one other a tangential point that Chuck Simon and I were discussing this morning.
Please do.
This is a grade two race for $200,000. There was one horse expected for this race, particularly that champion and everything else coming back off of a layoff, a solid 90-day layoff. The only trainers in Eastern Florida that put horses in this race were Alexis Delgado, Ian Wilkes, Stanley Gold, Stuart Simon, Barbara Mitchell, and Vicki Oliver.
What's the point?
There wasn't another three-year-old filly in all the major barns?
Well, okay, let's go through it a little bit. First of all, there is a dearth of good three-year-old fillies so far. Now, Todd Fletcher doesn't have any down there, right? Who did he have?
He appears not.
No, but he didn't. Who does he? You tell me.
I don't know.
It's not like he's been lighting it up with two-year-olds and fillies either. So, and Todd's not afraid to run against Jaywalk. I'm not going to get into the feedback, but she was pointing to this race.
That's true.
Skip this race, okay?
Yeah.
So she was going to run in this race. Things do happen. So there's Todd and Chad. I don't know. You tell me who should have run. I understand what you're saying, but Dale Romans? Dale Romans would run against Hercules. He doesn't care.
No.
I mean, Dale Romans is one guy that couldn't possibly care less about his percentage. If Dale had a three-year-old filly, he'd have been in there. He didn't care about Jaywalk. So, I mean,
I'm shocked.
Dale would have been there if he had somebody, right? So I'm not, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure who didn't run that could have.
Well, and let me. I don't. It's probably too late to look at the nominations, but
A number of people were in the forward. Gal came back, right? Three of them did come back.
Yeah, and maybe some are waiting for what's the thing
maybe
for the Gulfstream Oaks?
And got sick, right?
Yeah, could be.
I mean, I understand. I wish more horses ran more frequently, but in this particular case, I'm not really sure. I understand.
I don't know.
And, you know, Chuck is obviously, you know, he worked for the chief, and as the chief famously said, you know, I think it was the chief, right, is that you never, you know, skip a race because of one horse or whatever.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Idea. And that's a very cogent statement. But I don't know that this was a great example of that. That's all I'm saying. It has a pretty thin division. How many were in the Breeders' Cup? Nine?
That's true. That's a good point.
So I'm not really, you know, I'm not sure that I don't think that Jaywalk scared people away as much as I just don't know that there were many horses. How many were nominated?
Well, I was trying to scare up the nominations,
I don't feel like Todd. I can't come up with. I mean, he's got that, you know, mediocre horse that got, you know, that great trip to win the Busanda, was it, the mile and eighth race, and she's going to run in the Busher this weekend, but she's in New York, and she couldn't have won that race anyway. Ship her down Florida. Why would he ship her there? He's got a nice first race with points for the Kentucky Oaks in New York, and he's going to go ship down to run against Jaywalk. Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, I think Todd pretty clearly decides where, you know, the different divisions he has. He's more likely to ship south to north, not north to south. That's never how well has that worked in the past, right?
Yeah,
I just don't know what Todd has, right?
No, I'm just looking through that Bye Bye Jay and Fancy Dress Party. Where was Fancy Dress Party?
Who is she? Never even heard
that's,
of her.
That's Ben Colebrook, right? That was Ben Colebrook, the one, the Glitter time? Woman. Yeah, she ran. Did she? I don't think she ran in the. I can't remember if she ran in the forward.
I mean,
in the forward gal or not. But I'm just looking through other names.
I mean, Jaywalk probably did scare people a little bit, but I don't know about this one.
Just a point. I don't know. I thought it was a fair point from Chuck. I just looking at those names at you know the all good horse people. When you talk about
the names of trainers in a lot of races in Florida, they're not a lot of household names. Unless Todd Fletcher or Chad Brown are in there, it's not exactly a track that has right or who are the household names. I mean, that's one of the things I always liked about Florida. You know, you become familiar with trainers that you weren't familiar with in the past. You say Barbara Mitchell. Well, we've seen her run some good horses in some big races.
Barbara does a great job.
That won the Schuylerville for her, obviously got hurt and, you know, tried to come back. And I remember running in the Beaumont, Keeneland, but what was the horse's name? Like Something It Is?
Yes.
Crazy impressive winning in Saratoga.
Yeah.
And then got, sure unfortunately got hurt. Such a tough game. You know, there's such a roster of incredibly talented horses that, unfortunately, just injuries kept them off the race track.
I'll tell you what else is a factor in that, Andy. How about the you look at that maiden race with three-year-old fillies drew 13. The you know, the 3-year old filly race, that nice Cambier Park, she looks like she's going to be a nice, have a nice year. That drew
a whole judgment. I don't know how good she is, but okay.
She's okay. Well, how about the other one? How about Precious?
Yeah, she was okay, you know.
She was good.
Hard turf, yeah. She's got to show she can stay together, right? It's only her second race in 2 years.
So, there is the turf 3-year-old race at Tampa this week. There's the Honeybee out. Yeah, I suppose. It just might be a question of just numbers, period. Speaking of numbers, let's do this. A quick survey, and obviously they'll draw Wednesday, but as of a conversation with Dave Grenig this morning, Mind Control, Instagram, much better.
You have quite a show today. I mean, it's like a who's who.
Well, it's always a who's who, but it's actually Grenig was off air. Tick Van Flew, Eddie Barker with Family Biz, Heichel with Kieran McLaughlin.
Really
we'll talk tomorrow.
Biz in here, is he?
He is. Yeah, he is. He's probably listening too at this point.
I love not that. Eddie.
We love Eddie. Eddie Barker. Not that Brady. Looks like Ian McKinley did his magic on the foot, and he looks okay. Federal Case is going to run, and it looks like Nick's Go is going to get next. So an 8-horse Gotham.
Okay. Great. I'm looking through the horses that won the Gotham. I have the things up. Some great names in here. Secretary.
Yeah, it's a great race, sure.
General Assembly won the Gotham. People don't remember the General Assembly was second in both the Belmont, Derby and Preakness to the great spectacular bid.
Yep.
Cormorant won the Gotham, right? Air Force won. Didn't he beat Cure the Blues? And wasn't that crazy? Was that the race? No, Proud Appeal, I mean, beat Cure the Blues in that great duel, right? Eternal Prince with the MIG. Magambo. You know who was second to Magambo? And disqualified. Groovy.
What year? That's 80, what?
86.
86.
Magambo beat Groovy. Top Tasso, who never really did anything after that. I think he was the one, the 2-year-old, the Rears Cup, beat Stormcat. Private Terms, Gone West. Private Terms, Easy Goer, 36 Red. Devil Is Doing Lure, Dead Heating. As Indicated, by the way, a forgotten good horse for Rick Schlossberg. Ergun. Steve Young, who also won the Wood and beat Gopher Jan, who won the Derby. Talking Man, Romano Gucci, made an all-time big score on him in his debut. Red Bullet. Good horses in here. Saratoga County. Great race. I Want Revenge. Stay Thirsty, even. Hanson. Gotham's a great race. You come in, oh, you're going to Tampa.
Going to Tampa.
Well, you're pretty much touring the country.
It is. This is. We are fully engaged now.
This is your farewell tour.
Me and Elton John.
You're never going anywhere.
Exactly.
Are we done? Do you have somebody else to fill the rest of your
I show? Do. John White. John White's going to swing by.
I don't want to take any more of John's precious time. This has been really a pleasure for me.
Always. Always.
And to be included in that list of names, I mean, feels like a disaster movie from the 70s, filled with stars.
Exactly. That's like, see you later. Andy Serling, everybody. And looking forward to Saturday. How about that? A 3-hour show. 5 to 8. My God. A marathon session. And it's going to feature Tampa, Aqueduct, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita. It's just great that what Fox has done. We had that conversation with Mike and from Fox, and your pick five should be. I imagine the Honeybee will be. Because I would think that the sprint race is going to be a small field, so probably the Honeybee, the Tampa Bay Derby, the Gotham, and then two others. And in New York, they could use the Busher, the Stymie, the Tom Fool. Those are the other three stakes. And at Tampa, they got the Florida Oaks, the Hillsborough, There's also the two smaller stakes, the Columbia and the Challenger, but chances are to be one of the graded. So it should be a really good pick five next week, this week. And also, I'm waiting, Randy Weirman and Tyler Picklesheimer, kind enough to send the Jeff Ruby probables. I'm waiting for that. And their card is going to be terrific. With the Animal Kingdom, the Bourbonnet Oaks, it's a great name, the Bourbonnet Oaks, doesn't get enough credit. The Jeff Ruby, the Kentucky Cup Classic, reborn, and the Latonia, and the Rushaway. So, really a nice day at Turfway Park. Let's take a break, last of the morning, John White, and we'll get to the Santa Anita action, going back to Roadster's win on Friday. The Pasadena, you had Doug O'Neill. It's been a little quiet this winter, but Stubbins and Tyler Bayes. And then, you know, yesterday, if you didn't catch it, Edwards going left, who I really took a shine to last year. He came back in the Tisnow and won yesterday. Hadn't mentioned that. Joel Rosario, I think, had, what, three wins yesterday, coming back to Santa Anita. John White, close out. Monday at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 2:45, the rip through this morning already, and looking to connect with John White before we wrap up today. Tomorrow, Kieran McLaughlin and Stanley off. Now, let's see, no Andy now because Andy was today, so yeah, we're moving things around a little. And more. Oh, I want to get to Jimmy Jerkins. Last time I tried to reach Jimmy, he'd had the tooth out and couldn't talk. So hopefully we get to Jimmy. And when we talk to John, we can bring up what looks to be now a confrontation for the big cap coming up. They'll draw Wednesday. Sure looks like, you know, McKenzie and Giftbox. Pavel, if you didn't see it, Pavel is heading to Dubai for the World Cup. So no Pavel in the big cap, but Giftbox and McKenzie. Sonnetier is going. Sonnetier's sibling ran Saturday, right, at Gulfstream. Prime Attraction comes back for Cassidy. Noble Commander Dabster, who dances all the dances, and Campaign. But obviously this is the premier confrontation is McKenzie and Giftbox. John White joins us. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This is going to work out well because I was digging around the house trying to find enough quarters for a full half hour and I didn't find them. I'm not going to get cut off. But I have just enough quarters to make it to the top of the hour.
Perfect. Well, let's go a little bit of a lightning round. And, you know, I mentioned a couple of the stake wins from the weekend. Stubbins for O'Neill in the Pasadena and Edwards going left yesterday. And good to get him back in the win column. And there's quite a few interesting things happening. Let's use John Sadler as the focal point, because Nolo Contesto and Roadster from Friday, and I don't know what to say. Baffert kind of pulled to me a rabbit out of the hat, because I went to Andy Harrington and National Turf, and it didn't feel like, you know, I felt like it was Nolo Contesto's opportunity on Friday.
Well, I think kind of the tip-off a little bit had to be that 110 and change drill from the gate for Roadster, because
yeah,
that was the one that raised my eyebrows, particularly in conjunction with the rest of his work tab, because the rest of his work tab didn't have anything like that, a workout that I'd call a real zinger. And, boy, that just... And then the fact that he ran him in this race, you know, off of... not too long off of that workout. I mean... It kind of indicated to me this guy could be tough in there. On the other hand, I mean, Nolo Contesto, they love him at the Sadler Barn, and understandably so. I mean, this is a very nice son, a pioneer of the Nile, and I like Omaha Beach quite a bit myself, because even though Nolo Contesto beat Omaha Beach, Omaha Beach stumbled at the start that day, and I think Omaha Beach really took his game to a higher level when he romped to that nine-length maiden victory at 7 furlongs in the slot. But maybe running in that sloppy track took a toll, because he's battling a quarter crack now. On the other hand, Omaha Beach had a very good workout here just in the last few days. And if all continues to go well for Omaha Beach, he's ticketed for the Rebel. And I'll tell you, I think there's a lot of talent there with that Omaha Beach. I think he's just starting to really put it all together. And it would be really neat to see Richard Mandel show up on the first Saturday in May with a contender, and I think that could happen. And that Nolo Contesto, I think, you know, I mean, yes, he got beat, but it wasn't the most comfortable of trips, and he got beat by a very talented horse. I mean, this was the horse that... Roadster, that Baffert said to TMZ last year, they said, who's your next Justify? And he said, Roadster. So, I mean, he didn't say game winner, or he didn't say improbable, or anybody else of this murderer's row he's got over there. That was the one he named. And, of course, people tend to forget that in the Del Mar Futurity, this was the 3-5 favorite against Game Winner. I mean, that's how highly regarded Roadster was at the time, but he had battled, you know, and a throat issue, and they had to do a minor surgery on him. And but boy, this was a terrific comeback race for him, no question about it. Well, speaking of three-year-olds, though, I mean, you mentioned you're going to Tampa. I'm really interested to see how Win-Win-Win is going to do there. I mean, he had a bullet drill yesterday at Tampa, 47 flat, best of 75. And, I mean, when you watch that race that he won last time at Tampa, I mean, that was just visually impressive, a 99 buyer. I mean, it's not like he's a speed-crazy horse. He comes from off the pace. Boy, I kind of envy you to be able to get a in-person look at him, because I think he could be. I don't quite have him in my top 10 at this time, but he's just bubbling right under, and I'm just very curious to see what he is going to do in the Tampa Bay Derby. And then I'm at, you know, Instagram. He looked like the best 2-year-old in the country to me last year in his first two races, and then they put him away. So I'm very curious to see what he's going to do in the Gotham. And then, of course, we've got the big showdown at Santa Anita between the horses I have ranked 1-2 and that a lot of people have, at least in their top 3 or 4, and that, of course, is Game Winner, who has never lost, and Improbable, who has never lost. And of the two, I think Improbable has trained better. But, I mean, so it's kind of tricky for me. I'm not even sure who I'm going to make the morning line favorite in that race at this time. I'm leaning to Game Winner, because if I'm going to be wrong, I mean, I don't want to, like, not have a undefeated Breeders' Cup Eclipse Award winner. I mean, that's kind of playing it cute. I mean, I think he deserves to be the morning line favorite, to be honest with you, even though, like I say, I think Improbable, it wouldn't shock me if he won. It wouldn't shock me if he's the better horse. I might even pick Improbable to win the race, but I don't want to, like, disrespect a horse that has done nothing wrong. And think of this. I mean, what I just said, that Game Winner drilled Roadster in the Del Mar Futurity. So, you know, but like I say, that's kind of a tough call between those two, because there's not much at this point really separating Game Winner and Improbable. They're just both beasts, really, over there in that Baffert barn that is so loaded.
Well, part of obviously a huge weekend, and we'll obviously have a deep and compelling sets of PPs to go through, and we can't worry about that right this minute. But let's, John, also get some thoughts from what went on in the Fountain and how that reflects on your opinion going forward with that group.
Well, I think both Johnny D and Andy Serling really analyzed the race quite well between the two of them. I really don't have much to disagree, or anything really to disagree with either one of them. I mean, the one thing I will say about, I certainly agree with Andy that as far as just pure talent, you have to look at Hidden Scroll. On the other hand, I mean, and like when Andy was saying, the people criticizing Rosario, I think that the game plan here was to get him out of the gate in good shape. And sometimes with these horses that have just this natural speed like that, when you do that, you get them on tilt. And, you know, if you try to take them back then, you're going to get into a real wrestling match. And, I mean, so it's tricky because, and this is where someone like a Mike Smith is just so adept at this, that being able to be able to get out of the gate, but then also, you know, have a horse settle or rate for him, but it's tricky. It's not easy to do, especially with someone that's just is so gifted with this kind of natural speed. I mean, people were saying how insane the pace was, and really it was. But on the other hand, consider this: Hidden Scroll went the first half a full second slower than he did in his debut, and he went the first three quarters a full second slower than he did in his debut. I mean, and yes, it's a question of the two-turn race, one-turn race, mile and a 16th a mile, one race on a sloppy track, and one race on a fast track. But the point is that he's just a fast horse early. I mean,
right?
He just is, and so
I agree, and that's why I agree, John. And that's why, you know, the teeth gnashing over the supposedly Rosario confronting the 125-1 shot. Watch the replay. Watch the first half mile. It is no confronting.
That's right.
I mean, the horse is doing it on his own.
Exactly.
Rosario's not imploring him to go after Gladiator King. I think this whole direction is a little wrong-headed. He was there, and you also don't want to fight him either. I mean,
exactly.
you do what the horse is, you respond to the horse, and the horse put him in the race.
Now, I will tell you, it kind of brings to mind to me the Preakness with Nyquist, who was undefeated and got embroiled in the fastest opening quarter in Preakness history, and everybody was pointing the finger at Gutierrez. But like Tony Black on your show pointed out, and it's true, what happened in that race is, and he took full responsibility, was Doug O'Neill. And Doug O'Neill said, look, we want you to go. And, I mean, so Gutierrez was given the instructions to send, to go. I mean, that was the bottle plan. And, yes, I mean, it's easy to call a plan B. You know, people think it's easy, but it's not. If someone's told you to do something, then, I mean, you don't want to blow the mount on the horse because you don't follow instructions, and then he gets beat. So, I mean, a jockey can get caught in a kind of a tough spot like that. Do I follow the instructions or not? So there's a case, in that, my opinion, if you go back and look at how Gutierrez rode the first quarter of the Preakness, they did cook themselves, and I think it actually took a toll on the horse physically and mentally. Nyquist was never the same after that. And that is a question that has to be asked about Hidden Scroll that Andy was talking about. I mean, we have to sit back and see what they're going to do with him and how he reacts to these two races. I mean, he romped in his debut, but again, he ran fast. So this horse has been asked, a lot has been asked of this colt already in just two starts. And and I have to say, just because he's so fast early naturally, I don't necessarily sit here and look at him and say, boy, I'm very confident he'll love a mile and a quarter. I mean, that has to be something of a question mark for him at this point, at least. I mean, but he's got so much talent, I wouldn't rule it out either. I mean, because you don't want to underestimate very talented equine athletes, and that is certainly what we're dealing with this colt. The fact, as Andy said, that he didn't just, chuck it. I mean, he had every right to get beat 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 lengths
sure.
off of that pace. And the fact that he only got beat 3 really is admirable for the colt in defeat, quite honestly. And those three ahead of them, they're not chopped liver. Code of Honor, this is a very nice colt that we all know. He would have been considered a contender in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile if he had run in it off that huge effort in the Champagne. And Bourbon War has been highly regarded. If you look at his Thoroughgraph, he deserved respect in this race, and he got it in the betting to some extent. And he ran a very good race here, and Vekoma, I think, really didn't disgrace himself with his effort to finish third in here. So you said it at the outset. I mean, these horses, even Global Campaign, considering the fact he came out of the race with an injury, these horses, all of them, I think, are quality horses.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a race that we look back on, I think, positively. John, I appreciate it. We'll obviously dig in next week, and there'll be major impact to everybody's pecking order. So I appreciate it. Post time, John, and racing picks back up on Friday at Santa Anita with another storm expected. Before we go, I do want to slip in one piece of news. The rumor mill, make it a little bit more than rumor. Hoffa's Union, the horse we talked about from the other day at Laurel, the impressive first-out maiden winner for Gary Capuano and Nonstop Stable, Rose Petal Stable, and Ford Wilgis. It appears that there is a sale in the works, and there's a vetting process to go through. But two very high-profile partners that get involved together on a lot of horses look like they've acted, and when Hoffa's Union next appears, it'll be probably in a pink jacket. Let's put it that way. All right, you can chew on that one. and I also have your Jeff Ruby intendeds. Some Like It Hot Brown, Baytown Jimbo, 12th of Neverland, Five Star General, Skywire, Counteroffer, Curlin Gray, Moonster, Dynamic Racer, Dabo, and Speed App. There's your Jeff Ruby field, it looks like. Good luck if you're playing today. And, of course, Parks option. And, you know, limited. It's Monday. But, you know, fairly quiet. Let me see if there's anything else I'm missing. And tomorrow, of course, you got Mardi Gras. But Louisiana Downs today, too. Mahoning Valley and Turf Paradise. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.